Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. More than 100 years ago, long before Napster or Spotify shook up the music industry, there was a hot new technology challenging the copyrights of composers, the player piano. The year was 1890, and the self-playing piano was a technological wonder. It operated like a music box, translating perforated rolls of paper into song. People would gather around them and sing and dance. As popular as the player piano was, some were wary, most notably people who made their living making music. Joining us now is Christopher John Sprigman, a professor at New York University of Law. He co-wrote the article Scales of Justice for Slate.com. Christopher, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you for having me.
So why were musicians and composers in the 1890s fretting about the player piano?
Well, it was the composers who were fretting, and the reason was pretty simple. So they made their money off of sheet music. If you think about it, before the player piano, the only way you could hear music was by having musicians play it for you, and the musicians would play it using sheet music. So the composers made their money by selling copies of sheet music, which were copyrighted, and so they could restrain people from copying them, and they could sell them. When the player piano came along, the player piano manufacturers argued that the player piano rolls, which are just rolls of paper with holes punched in them, weren't sheet music. These weren't copies of the compositions. These were simply rolls of paper with holes in them. It's a crazy argument, actually. I mean, it's sheet music. It's just sheet music that a machine can read.
So composers couldn't get royalties. Eventually, this becomes a legal battle over whether player piano companies should be compelled to pay royalties, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court in 1908. So tell us a little bit about the case and the ruling.
Right, so the 1908 case that goes to the Supreme Court is White Smith Music Publishing Company versus Apollo. And in this case, the Supreme Court agrees with the player piano manufacturers that the player piano rolls are not, in fact, sheet music. They are not, in fact, copies of copyrighted musical compositions. And so there's no copyright that applies to these player piano rolls. Now, that doesn't last. Congress overturns the decision.
What was behind Congress overturning the decision? What was their interest?
So in 1909, Congress enacts a major reform of the Copyright Act. The 1909 Copyright Act, among many other changes to copyright, extends copyright to these new mechanical reproductions of copyrighted music. The player piano roll is a mechanical reproduction. So Congress extends the copyright, but they're afraid of a company named Aeolian that makes player pianos. So they do something odd to restrain Aeolian. Congress rules in the law that anyone can copy a musical composition into a mechanical reproduction like a player piano roll as long as they pay the composer, the owner of the copyright in the musical composition, 2 cents per copy.
Hmm.
And this is an unusual rule that applies only to mechanical reproductions of copyrighted musical compositions.
Soon to follow was the wax cylinder and then eventually the vinyl record. Now, those are both copies of music as well. Was Congress
exactly.
Kind of paving the way for 2 cents per copy on that, or when did royalties come about?
So it's unclear whether Congress understands the scope of what it did, but you're right that mechanical reproductions of copyrighted musical compositions started out as player piano rolls, but then also, of course, phonographic cylinders and then phonographic records and then cassette tapes and CDs and now downloads. So what you get is a compulsory license written into the law whereby anyone who wishes to make their own recording of a copyrighted musical composition can do so and pay 2 cents per copy that they sell.
This is funny to me because it sounds like Congress created the cover song.
Congress, in effect, created the legal cover song. And in doing so, they really departed from the typical rule of copyright law, which is that you've got to have an individual negotiation to do something with somebody's copyrighted work. They depart from that rule in an important way. They create the cover song, and they basically birth an important American institution. If you think about all the incredible musical creativity in America that's gone on as cover songs, it's an important part of our culture.
Behind this story of an historic copyright decision is what's going on today. And you write that this kind of creative copying or just the tweaking of an idea to make something your own, does this happen in other spheres outside of the music world?
Sure, it happens in a lot of spheres. So take Apple Computer, which is now, by some counts, the most valuable company in the world. So they started out in the 1970s. And one of the early episodes in that company is Steve Jobs, their CEO, goes on a tour of the Xerox Palo Alto Research facility. While he's there, he sees a computer, a kind of prototype computer that Xerox had invented. The graphical user interface is kind of clunky, and the mouse is kind of clunky. So what does Steve Jobs do? He takes those ideas back to Apple, and he makes them good. He tweaks them. And we get first the Lisa and then the Macintosh. So, you know, Steve Jobs, who's thought of as a pioneer, in fact, he's really one of the world's greatest tweakers. He's one of the reinventors who made a great idea even greater. I mean, even Thomas Edison, the inventor of the light bulb, who's certainly thought of as a pioneer, by the time Edison got to the light bulb, there were dozens and dozens of light bulb designs. What Edison did was he tweaked and tweaked and tweaked these designs until he made a light bulb that actually lasted long enough to be commercially viable. So again, Edison didn't start from scratch. He started with the materials around him, and he just made them better. So much of invention is not creating things out of nothing. It's improving on what we see around us.
Well, this, of course, is the argument that's being made by a lot of people in the, you know, pro-sharing internet culture. So are there parallels, Christopher, to the player piano and today's cheap or free streaming services like Spotify or illegal downloading?
Absolutely. So unlawful downloading of music is, whether people like it or not, is very much a fact in the world that's not going to go away. So what we've seen since 1999 is the revenues of the major record companies go down very substantially, cut in more than half. Illegal file sharing has a lot to do with that. On the other hand, what we've also seen at the same time is an explosion in musical creativity. We've seen the output of recorded music go up and its quality stay very high. Now, you know, the same technologies that lead to unlawful downloading also lead to musicians being able to get their music out cheaper and better, and to fans being more able to find the music that they like. You know, the internet takes away, but it also gives. Illegal downloading is certainly an issue, but it's not the death of the music industry or the death of any form of art.
Well, how's the player piano industry doing these days?
The player piano industry is mostly gone. Aeolian Company shut up shop about 30 years ago. But of course, you know, technology moves on, and we've got much better methods of reproducing music now. Maybe not as quaint, but certainly better.
Christopher John Sprigman, thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Christopher John Sprigman is a professor at NYU School of Law. He's also co-director of the Engelberg Center on Innovation Law and Policy. He co-wrote the article Scales of Justice for Slate.com. You'll find a link to read it for yourself at wordofmouthradio.org. Christopher, do you have a favorite cover song?
Yeah, my favorite cover song of all time is the Patti Smith version of the great Van Morrison song, Gloria.
Then we're going to have to hear that.